A very big bank jumps into the gun control business. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. Citigroup, the banking giant, has announced that it will start requiring new retail business clients to put restrictions on gun sales. This is a first for a big bank. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer has details of what the number four bank is doing.
Well, the bank would require new clients who are retailers dealing with guns to follow some rules. First, they can't sell firearms to someone who hasn't passed a background check. Second, they can't sell guns to anyone under 21. And third, they can't sell bump stocks, which make a semi-automatic weapon fire faster.
Now, this affects retail loans to whom?
Well, this policy would apply to new retail clients who want to borrow money from Citi, use its banking services, or start offering a credit card backed by Citigroup.
And does this affect the existing clients at Citigroup?
Yeah, it looks like they would eventually be affected. In a blog on its website, Citi says it started to engage with its existing clients, quote, in the hope that they will adopt these best practices over the coming months. If clients don't do that, the blog says Citi will respect that and work with them to transition their business away from Citi. I should say Citi has few relationships with companies that make guns, but it says it will be talking to them to understand what products they make and the sales practices of the retailers they sell to. So it doesn't look like these rules will affect a huge share of Citi's business. Reuters reports Citi had total assets of almost $2 trillion at the end of last year.
All right, Nancy, thank you. Tomorrow, what could be hundreds of thousands of people will march in Washington to support more controls on some firearms. Survivors of last month's deadly school shooting in Parkland, Florida, helped organize what's called the March for Our Lives, and they had to raise money to make this happen. Marketplace's Andy Euler reports.
It's about 1,000 miles from Parkland, Florida to Washington, D.C. Marjorie Stoneman Douglas high school student Diego Pfeiffer can't wait to get there. He says he's able to do it without shelling out much money at all.
Most of the things are being voluntarily given to us to get kids up there. Many flight seats have just been given to us by airlines. Many people at hotels are renting out their hotels just for Douglas students.
But public events like this aren't cheap. Street closures, police, bathrooms. The group organizing the March for Our Lives used social media and online fundraising to help pay for it, already having raised more than $3 million through a GoFundMe page. Una Osley studies the economics of philanthropy at Indiana University. She says this level of online fundraising wouldn't have been possible just a few years ago.
The power of social media combined with the internet allows people of all ages to act as their own fundraisers, essentially.
She says that's a blessing and a curse because not all sites can guarantee the money will go where you want it to. I'm Andy Euler for Marketplace.
Checking markets amid the headlines about the Trump-China tariffs, the Dow fell 724 points yesterday, not quite 3%. This morning, Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are still down. The Dow and S&P future down 0.3%. The $1.3 trillion spending plan that keeps the federal government open is now headed to President Trump for his expected signature. The big stuff will get lots of attention. Pay raises for U.S. troops, more money for infrastructure, hardening border security, and combating opioid abuse. Now, other bits are also interesting, but you might miss them. Congress is blocking a new rule that would have allowed employers to pool or even grab the tips of waiters and waitresses. There's money to beef up the firearms background check system, and the CDC can now collect data on gun violence. Federal arts and humanities funding goes up slightly. Public television and radio still have a budget. And Congress is fixing an oddity in the tax overhaul that gave some farmers a big advantage over others. Note that when the White House hit China yesterday with as much as $60 billion in trade sanctions, at the same time the U.S. said the recent steel and aluminum tariffs will not apply to some allies, including the European Union and Brazil. Securing ad hoc custom deals on trade has a retro Cold War feel to some. In Berlin, Stefan Richter is editor-in-chief of the online publication The Globalist, and he has a reminder that something called Comic-Con was more than just a comic book trade show. Hi, Stefan.
Hi, David.
All right. So one term of art bilateral, two countries working out their trade rules. But you think there's a kind of back to the future aspect of this?
Well, it's back to the past, of course. This is almost Old Testament. It's called the Comecon. A few people will remember, but it was a very powerful economic organization that the Soviet Union set up, the so-called Council for Mutual Economic Assistance, where the Soviets called all the shots on all the product flows. Everything was bilateral. And if you were Cuba, you were told to deliver 90% of your grapefruit production to Moscow. And for that, you got maybe some trucks out of East German production or something. But we know that the Soviet Union collapsed. And one big part was that it was never productive in terms of export goods and all the like. And so it's really something one shouldn't go to, but Donald Trump seems to be hell-bent on going there, and that's a worry for people all over the world.
All right, but these are not vassal countries the U.S. wants to deal with. There has to be some level of two-way street, an actual negotiation.
Correct. And the big hope right now is that with regard to China, if, after the overture with aluminum and steel, they focused on finding smart ways to tell the Chinese that we live in a global market and that they need to keep up their side of the bargain, then it would all of a sudden turn into a big hooray for Donald Trump.
Stefan Richter, editor-in-chief of The Globalist. He's in Berlin. Stefan, always good to talk to you.
Same here. Bye.
Our executive producer is Nicole Childers. Our digital producer is Janet Wynn. Our engineer is Brian Allison. I am David Brancaccio. And this is the Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.